receive my comments in the spirit in which they are offered. Serious concern by a director who believes that we, the Disney directors, have long been too compliant and uncritical of management's failures. We can no longer accept as fact that all of the bad things that happen to Disney are out of management's control, and all of the good things are a result of having the best CEO in the business. Kindest personal regards, Stanley P. Gold. Gold sent copies to Eisner and each member of the board. Andrea VandeKemp, for one, was startled by the tone of Gold's letter. She knew he was concerned, but thought the letter was harsh and would likely prove ineffective with other board members. She called Bob Iger to discuss it. "We're really upset," he told her. "Michael is frantic." Eisner's counterattack was swift. The day Gold sent his letter, Disney disclosed that Gold's daughter, Jennifer, worked in Disney's consumer products division. Disney also disclosed that Ray Watson's son, Ray Jr., worked at the Disney Channel, and that Ravetta Bowers' son, Craig, had previously worked in Disney's Internet Group. The most startling disclosure was that John Bryson's wife earned $1.35 million a year as an executive at the Disney co-owned Lifetime Channel. Under the guidelines being developed by Ira Milstein, Gold would be forced to step down as co-chairman of the governance and compensation committees. These developments were especially unsettling to Ravetta Bowers, who had long endured criticism that she was only on the board because Eisner's sons had attended her school. Informed that she would no longer be considered independent, even though her son was no longer at Disney, and therefore that she could no longer serve on the nominating or compensation committees, she told Eisner she wanted to resign. Instead, he persuaded her to wait until the end of the year, when she wouldn't stand for re-election. A week later, on August 16, 2002, Eisner and Gold met for lunch at the Lakeside Golf Club, the scene of the celebratory lunch on the day Eisner and Wells were named chairman and president. Eisner began by again accusing Gold of leaking to the press, which Gold hotly denied. "Bruce Orwell told me he spoke to you," Eisner insisted. Orwell covered Disney for the Wall Street Journal. "Let's take a fucking lie detector test," Gold said. "I have not spoken to Bruce Orwell, so either he's lying or you're lying. Which one is it?" "Orwell told me he never told Eisner that Gold had spoken to him." "I never said anything of the sort," Orwell said. Eisner dropped the matter and turned to the real reason for the lunch. He asked Gold to resign as chairman of the powerful governance and nominating committee. Gold refused. He said the person who should be resigning was Eisner. He reminded Eisner of his repeated promise to step down if he lost Gold's and Roy's confidence. "I never said that," Eisner said. Gold was incredulous. Eisner had said it many times over the years, to him, to Roy, to their wives, and to others as well. "Let me ask you, Michael," he said, "are you going to go out as a gentleman, or are you going to be carried out on your shield?" "Let me assure you I'll be here long after you're gone," Eisner retorted, before angrily walking out. Gold followed up with a letter to the board the following Monday, in which he refused to relinquish his position on the committee. He quoted the New York Stock Exchange guidelines to the effect that employment of a relative does not preclude the board from determining that a director is independent. Such employment arrangements are common.